more you want to say about it, and if Naomi Wolf has responded.
You know, it's interesting. She posted something this morning, actually, or maybe it was yesterday, casting this as a sort of some sort of a, like my work as some sort of being part of a plot to attack her, which isn't surprising, you know, and she's using it to. I think that this must be very hard for her, is what I would say. And, you know, I have really tried to reiterate that she is a case study, an interesting one, but this is not about her. I personally think she's been treated quite cruelly. I'm not interested in adding to that. You know, I do think that we need to hold one another accountable, but that doesn't mean that we have a right to be cruel. You know, I hope that if she were to actually read the book, she would see that it isn't perhaps...
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with and requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee will meet twice in September via public video conference. The Finance Committee will meet on Thursday, September 7th at 5:30 p.m. and again Thursday, September 21st at 5:30 p.m. A public link and phone number to attend the virtual meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
September 17th is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Hank Williams Sr., one of the finest singer-songwriters this country has ever produced. KBOO Swingin' Country is celebrating this event by dedicating an entire broadcast to the music of Hank Williams. Tune in to KBOO Swingin' Country on Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., for 3 hours of all things Hank Williams considered. We'll have songs sung by Hank, songs written by Hank, and songs about Hank. You don't want to miss it. Once again, that is Saturday, September 30th, from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on KBOO.FM or 90.7 FM in the Portland area. Son of a gun, we'll have some fun.
I'm the sweetest one, me, oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Kaiser Healthcare and building workers vote to authorize a strike. Portland unveils its first draft of a new city administrative system. And students plan to walk out for climate tomorrow. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 14, 2023. I'm Eric Wojcicki. SEIU, organized Kaiser Healthcare and Building Service workers, have voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike. They say staffing shortages, low pay, and a high cost of living are major issues that need addressing, but Kaiser hasn't made meaningful proposals to fix those problems. With strike authorization in hand, workers in Oregon, Washington, and other parts of the country could go on strike as soon as October 10. If they do, it'll be the largest healthcare strike in U.S. history. KBOO's Althea Billings reports.
4,000 Oregon and Washington healthcare workers have overwhelmingly voted to authorize a strike at Kaiser Permanente in response to alleged unfair labor practices by management. These workers are represented by SEIU Local 49, and their strike authorization vote got 98% approval from workers. It's not just in the Northwest. 99% of Colorado Kaiser workers with SEIU voted to authorize a strike, and California Kaiser workers will announce their results later today. It could become the largest healthcare strike in U.S. history if an agreement can't be reached. A central issue is the staffing crisis at Kaiser that has persisted through the pandemic until now. Meg Neamy is the president of SEIU Local 49. She spoke at a press conference outside the AFL-CIO building in Portland this morning.
We have proposed solutions to say to Kaiser Permanente, you need to hire 10,000 people. And the other issue that is at play is the increased cost of living that people have faced these past few years, especially those folks working in the front lines. And our members are certified nurses assistants. They're phlebotomists. They're patient registration reps. They are housekeeping. They are dietary workers. They are some of the workers that you see first when you enter the healthcare system and often are there most with you by the bedside. And so we've come to Kaiser with those pieces. What they have done is bargain in bad faith, not listen to us, and not come up with real solutions since we've been in bargaining in April. And we look and we think, can Kaiser afford to agree to what our members are asking for? And the answer is absolutely yes.
Kevin Darden is a patient access representative at Kaiser Sunnyside. Darden explains how staffing shortages impact patients.
What we're seeing today is members standing up against corporate greed. At Sunnyside Medical Center, right before COVID, we saw Kaiser cut our full-time employees. The COVID-19 crisis only made that worse. Now a department that used to be close to 60 employees is now to about 37. Kaiser also took extreme measures of cutting our urgent care and pharmacy hours, leading more members to our emergency department and overwhelming our emergency services. We are not just Kaiser employees, we are also members of Kaiser and patients of Kaiser. As such, we use their services. My mother recently this year spent so many times in the emergency department, and when we tried to do follow-up appointments with her, they told us that her appointment time would be 4 to 6 weeks out. My mother had to go out of country to receive the care that she needed because Kaiser could not keep up with the patient demands that we're seeing. Employees have been working over their coded hours, close to 50 to 60 hours in my department, just to meet the patient demand and so that our fellow coworkers are not working short. We are tired, COVID has drained us, our batteries are running in low, and Kaiser has the resources and the money to staff us properly and give the employees the livable wages that we need.
SEIU will be back in negotiations with Kaiser management on Thursday and Friday of next week, the 21st and 22nd of September. The union and management have been in negotiations since April, and their contract expires on September 30th. With the results of the strike authorization vote in hand, union leaders could call for a strike as soon as the contract expires. They're required to give Kaiser 10 days' notice before going on strike, but it isn't what they want, Nimi says.
Well, our members are the front line of patient care, so the fact that they have to even be making this decision right now is actually heartbreaking because we've been in negotiations since April trying to reach an agreement. But we know that part of the process that we will follow to let Kaiser Permanente management know is that we would give them a 10-day notice before there were to be any strike activity. And then at that time, it is really Kaiser's responsibility to make sure that that patients are getting any care and services that they need.
For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
Care.
Hey, what's it about?
Patient care.
Hey, this is about?
Patient care.
Portland has shared its first draft of a new organizational chart for city government. In 2022, voters passed the Charter Change Amendment, greenlighting an overhaul of Portland city government. One major change is how city bureaus and services are run. Instead of being held in different bureaus run by different elected commissioners, they'll be reorganized under the control of the city administrator and mayor. There will also be 5 deputy city administrators for the different departments. The administrative overhaul creates 5 groups of bureaus. The first is budget and finance, which is pretty much what it sounds like. The second is community and economic development, which will include permitting, planning, and sustainability, and the current housing bureau. The third is city operations, which includes the independent police review, city facilities, and asset management. The fourth group is community safety, which will include cops, fire and rescue, plus emergency management. The last group is public works, which will include transportation, arts, and parks. It's a big shift from the current system, which has been criticized for not being transparent and unclear about who is in charge. Michael Jordan is the city's chief administrative officer. Jordan told OPB, quote, "This makes everybody more accountable. I think that for the first time, maybe in the city's history, you'll be able to say, okay, why didn't this go well? And someone will have to answer you. You'll know who's supposed to be making that decision and how it got made," end quote. Portland is on a time crunch. The new administrative system must be ready for the transition by January 1st, 2025. Tomorrow, youth climate activists around the state will be walking out of school to demand action on climate change. It's the Youth Climate Strike, and Portland, Bend, Florence, and Salem students will be protesting for climate action. They have some statewide demands, like calling on Tina Kotek to declare a climate emergency, as well as local demands. Currently, Hawaii is the only state that has declared a climate emergency. Oregon would be the second. It would allow Kotek to prioritize using state funds and resources to help prevent or alleviate the climate crisis in the state. Also in the demands for Portland, activists are calling on the state to reject the air permit for Zenith Energy. Zenith Energy has a fossil fuel transportation hub in northwest Portland. It receives crude oil and renewable fuels from Canada and Montana and stores those fuels in tanks. Portland previously denied their land use permit and were validated in that denial through the courts of appeal. City leaders went back on their promises to stop Zenith and granted a new permit. This is after significant courting from and private meetings with Zenith, as Street Roots reported last month. Students will rally at Portland City Hall at 11 a.m. and will march at 11:45. Home care aides have struggled to afford health insurance for their kids, but the union representing these caregivers in Washington State is now available to extend coverage to their dependents. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
Home care aides in Washington State are seeing the benefits of health coverage for their kids. Members of SEIU 775, who take care of people at home, now have access to health care for their dependents. For caregiver Danny Rice, this is a big deal. Her son didn't have health insurance for 5 years because it was unaffordable for Rice and her husband. She says there were scary moments during that time, including when he came home from school with a bloody nose.
Now that we actually have health insurance, it's a massive relief off of our shoulders because COVID's not going away and my son's not getting any less clumsy.
Rice has coverage for her younger son as well. At-home caregivers who work at least 120 hours a month have access to medical and dental coverage for kids for $100 a month. About 1,400 kids have been enrolled in the program so far. Adam Glickman with SEIU 775 says the union heard from members that this was a pressing need.
It seemed like it was becoming increasingly difficult to find doctors, to find dentists, to really get good coverage under Apple Health, under Medicaid.
Rice says this is important because many people in the industry are parents.
The vast majority of us either are just on the edge where we don't qualify for assistance anymore, or do need help with affordable health insurance. And so this has been a massive benefit for everyone.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Senator Mitt Romney says he won't seek re-election, opening the way for a younger leader. United Auto Workers could plan strikes as their contract expires. And DACA is declared unlawful by a federal judge, but is staying in place for the time being. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think it's time for guys like me to get out of the way and have people in the next generation step forward, because they're going to be shaping the world they're going to be living in.
76-year-old Republican Utah Senator Mitt Romney is retiring from the Senate at the end of his term, saying it's time for a new generation of leaders. The move is a blow to moderate Republicans and those opposed to former President Donald Trump. And Romney says the U.S. would be better off if the two frontrunners for the White House, President Joe Biden and Trump, also stepped aside. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre calls the Biden impeachment inquiry a baseless political stunt because long-running investigations have failed to show any evidence that the president benefited from his son Hunter's businesses. She called out House Speaker Kevin McCarthy for ordering the inquiry under pressure from hardline Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Matt Gaetz of Florida.
So he didn't even put up for a vote, as you all know, because he knows that even his own members weren't going to support this. So, that's why we call it baseless.
McCarthy defends the decision to open an impeachment inquiry without a floor vote, saying his predecessor, Nancy Pelosi, changed the rules in the House. The United Auto Workers Union is likely headed toward a strike when their current four-year contract expires at midnight. The union and the big Detroit automakers, General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis, have hit roadblocks on wage increases and cost of living adjustments. Democrat Rashida Tlaib represents a district in Michigan.
The big three CEOs received a whopping 40% increase in pay, while workers right now, the majority of them, living check by check.
The strike has the potential to be one of the largest U.S. labor actions in years. A Texas federal judge has ruled the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival program is illegal for a second time, although he's stayed his order, meaning 600,000 Dreamers can remain in the country for now. Neri Lopez, a DACA recipient, praised the program on MSNBC.
It gave me the opportunity to go to college. I graduated from FIU, and it's giving me the opportunity to think beyond just living in the shadows.
Critics say President Obama went beyond his authority when he created DACA by executive action in 2012. Speaking at a Washington think tank Wednesday, Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy called for cutting the federal workforce by up to three quarters.
Large-scale mass layoffs are absolutely what we will bring to the D.C. bureaucracy, both because it is necessary and it is sanctioned by the law of the United States.
Ramaswamy says he wants to eliminate the FBI, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, and the Department of Education by executive action, sidestepping votes in Congress. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacific Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you? Well, they're two different.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. At 6 o'clock, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight of 54 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be hot and sunny with a daytime high of 90 degrees. Today in history, in 1970, Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson was born. She was nominated to the Supreme Court in 2022, becoming first Black woman to hold the position. The quote of the day is from Jackson, who said, quote, "The rule of law is not a slogan to be waved about. It is the bedrock of our nation." Alaska mourns the death of Jean Buzzy Peltola, the husband of U.S. Representative Mary Peltola. He died in a plane crash on Tuesday. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The husband of Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola died after a plane crash on Tuesday. He was 57. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, Jean Buzzy Peltola is being remembered as both a supportive husband and a leader in his own right.
When Mary Peltola ran for Congress, her husband, Buzzy Peltola, was often behind the scenes, beaming proudly. And as she took her oath of office to become the first Alaska Native woman to serve in Congress, he stood beside her wearing a traditional Native kuspuk, holding the Bible. For many Alaskans, the couple seemed to embody Peltola's campaign slogan, "Fish, Freedom, and Family," an image that shattered when he was flying solo in a small plane that crashed into a mountain near St. Mary's on the Yukon River, part of a vast region he knew well in more than three decades of work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Bethel. Eventually, he became the first Alaska Native to manage the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge, and later served as the Alaska Regional Director for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Throughout his public service career, there was a common thread: Peltola's passion for hunting, fishing, and giving Alaska Natives more say in how fish and wildlife are managed, a passion he shared with Lamont Albertson, one of the founders of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission.
It's just so hard to find the words to describe his intelligence and how intuitive the guy was. He was assertive and he knew how to say the right things at the right time.
Albertson, who will soon turn 80, has known both Mary and Buzzy Peltola since they were kids, but says he'll cherish a recent memory forever. After suffering a stroke, they sent him a care package with subsistence foods to help him recover. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
It's National Suicide Prevention Week, and new data shows the suicide rate in the U.S. has increased dramatically over the past 20 years. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Kayla Bradle reports, that's especially true for Native Americans and Alaska Natives.
The analysis was done by Pew Charitable Trusts. It found that from 2000 to 2020, the national suicide rate grew 30%. For Native American and Alaska Native women, the rate spiked more than 130%. For men, it jumped over 90%. Emily Edmonds-Harrows is with the Johns Hopkins Center for Indigenous Health. She says a major factor is the historical trauma caused by colonization and the boarding school era.
If a parent is traumatized because of these experiences and experiences those things and not allowed to talk about it, not allowed to cope with it, they then pass along that trauma to their children, and sort of this cycle perpetuates itself.
She says there's also a lack of funding for mental health care services in tribal communities. But efforts to bridge the gap are coming from the Indian Health Service, which is training tribal members to respond to people in crisis. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Artists Keith Braveheart and Marty Two Bulls Jr. have been named as the Oglala Sioux Tribe's 2023-24 Artist Laureates. In the role, the pair will serve as cultural ambassadors for the tribe, support artistic endeavors on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and enrich their communities through their works. They both work as educators in addition to their art, serving as art professors at Oglala Lakota College. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Federal Environmental Protection Agency is collecting comments on a new rule regarding standards for blast furnaces through Friday. Farah Siddiqui has more on the story.
Emission standards for blast furnaces such as the iron and steel mills in Ohio haven't been updated in years. The EPA has proposed a new rule for iron and steel mills under the Clean Air Act, and comments can be submitted through today. Matthew Mihalik is with Breathe Project, a regional collaborative advocating against severe air quality issues. He says the communities are subjected to pollutants such as heavy metals, benzene, and lead, so the public needs to speak up.
It's time that companies that operate facilities where a major blast furnace is part of an integrated steel mill are progressing and innovating so workers, as well as people who live in proximity to them, are not bearing the disproportionate burden of these hazardous air emissions.
The EPA is collecting comments through today on the proposed rules for the Clean Air Act. Mihalik says the Breathe Project can help people get in touch with local representatives and get the comments in effectively. They can be contacted at breatheproject.org. For states such as Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan, well-paying industrial jobs are feared to be in shortage. Mihalik says it's entirely possible to preserve them. He says it's important for people to ask for reductions in fugitive emissions at these facilities.
These are leaks at these blast furnaces, and it's possible for the operators who have been making a handsome profit to invest in their facilities. It's also important to ask for stack emission reductions. It seems possible to reduce these up to 90%. That can be a big improvement in community health.
He says a third provision is for the EPA to require operators of blast furnaces to set up fence line monitoring programs. This is standard practice at most refineries and chemical facilities throughout the country and would make data available to the public so they can see how well the facilities are reining in the emissions and reducing risks to the community. For Ohio News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
Republican leaders in Wisconsin are taking more steps to set up a possible impeachment vote against a new liberal state Supreme Court justice. But is that something voters want? A new poll suggests most registered voters around the state oppose the idea. Mike Moen reports.
Following last spring's election, where Wisconsin voted in a liberal justice to the state Supreme Court, Republican leaders are further exploring a possible impeachment. A new poll suggests the idea doesn't sit well with voters. A Better Wisconsin Together, a left-leaning research group, is out with new survey results showing that Wisconsinites oppose impeaching Supreme Court Justice Jana Protasiewicz by a 24-point margin. The poll was released the same day Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss announced he's putting together a panel to look at grounds for removing the judge. A Better Wisconsin Together's Mike Brown says, based on the election and the survey, such a move goes against the will of voters.
Wisconsin voters value their votes, and they expect that their legislators will respect the results of those votes. The impeachment proceedings threatening to overturn the election are very definitely in opposition to what a very strong majority of Wisconsin voters feel.
Brown says the poll of 600 registered voters conducted by a national firm was essentially evenly split in connecting with Republicans and Democrats. Voss and other Republicans have floated a possible impeachment over opposition to comments Protasiewicz made on the campaign trail regarding redistricting. Her victory switched the court to a liberal majority. Brown notes that any misgivings about what the judge said prior to the election don't carry much weight.
The Judicial Commission, which oversees and enforces court ethics, has already dismissed several baseless complaints brought by state Republicans against Justice Protasiewicz, and they declared the matter closed.
Also from the poll, 46% of Wisconsin voters think any effort to remove Protasiewicz is driven by political motivations among Republicans based on the election results. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
It's National Assisted Living Week. Oregonians say having long-term care available to them is a high priority. Eric Tegedoff has the story.
This week is National Assisted Living Week, highlighting the hard work put in to help older people and people living with disabilities. Many Oregonians hope to stay in their homes as they age, but that often requires long-term care. Stacey Larson is with AARP Oregon.
Oregon is one of the fastest aging states in the country, and as the population ages, these questions of caregiving and long-term quality care are top of mind for many, many people, and that certainly was borne out in our research.
According to AARP's Vital Voices survey, 84% of Oregonians think it's important to get to age in place, and 72% think it's important to have high-quality long-term care in their communities. This legislative session, state lawmakers passed protections for LGBTQ Oregonians in long-term care facilities. Larson says the new law is critical for ensuring that everyone is able to age with dignity. She says the measure prohibits actions based wholly or partially on someone's perceived gender identity, sexual orientation, or HIV status.
Those actions might include denying admission, transfer, or discharge requests, perhaps inappropriate room assignments for transgender patients, and denying or restricting medical or non-medical care.
The people who do the caregiving also are important. Oregon has about 470,000 caregivers who assist loved ones but are not compensated for it. It can be hard to get a break from their duties, but Larson says the state is going to help provide resources.
We have successfully advocated for budget funding for a soon-to-be-created program that would provide respite support services to family caregivers. There is currently very little support for those hundreds of thousands of family caregivers.
Larson notes AARP also has respite resources available for caregivers. This is Eric Tegedoff for Oregon News Service.
A surge in gray whale standings along the West Coast has raised alarms among researchers. Is climate change to blame? Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Since 2019, more than 600 gray whales have washed ashore along the West Coast, from Mexico to Alaska. Occasional strandings occur every year, but these numbers are far higher than normal, and some of the whales were abnormally thin.
We set about to really try to look at what was going on with their food source.
Sue Moore of the University of Washington says gray whales do most of their feeding in the Arctic during the summer. They primarily eat small arthropods that live on the ocean floor. But in some areas, these bottom-dwelling animals are declining, and the mix of species is shifting. Moore says those changes are partly driven by the changing climate. Melting sea ice speeds up Arctic ocean currents, which limit the ability of some arthropods to build homes in the sediment. Melting ice also affects the growth of algae, which these creatures need for food. In some areas, Moore says whales are turning to other sources of food, such as krill.
But it's very hard to be definitive about how that could cause a mortality event.
So she says more research is needed, but it appears that even this large, powerful mammal faces challenges adapting to the warming world.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 14, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Farah Siddiqui, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. The unending humanitarian crisis in Haiti. Promises on aid to the global south, and genocide in Nagorno-Karabakh. The unending humanitarian crisis in Haiti. The violence in Haiti gets progressively worse. Gangs are said to control 80% of Port-au-Prince, the capital, where they pillage, rape, and execute those who oppose them. Citizen vigilante groups have added to the violence, killing gang members in retribution. Now Kenya may become the first African leader of a UN peacekeeping group, though Kenya has a poor reputation in that role. In any case, Kenya would only send about 1,000 soldiers.